Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
She was succeeding at everything. The career, the promotions, the glossy bylines, fashion weeks in London, New York, and Toronto. And she was completely falling apart on the inside. The exhaustion she felt was not laziness. It was not weakness. It was not something that she could outwork or outsmart or push through. It was her body sending her a signal. She had spent years ignoring. Today, we are talking about the kind of burnout that hides behind ambition and what it actually takes to get your energy back. My guest today started her career at Fashion Week and ended up rebuilding her entire life from the inside out. Lisa is a registered holistic nutritionist, certified health coach, and a founder of 14 Carats, a nutrition practice built around helping women in midlife overcome fatigue, poor sleep, and perimenopause symptoms with evidence-based hormone-aware nutrition that fits in real life. Her own journey took her from Diet Coke and deadlines through grief, burnout, food fear, and restriction. Today, in her 40s, having more energy and clarity than she ever did in her 20s. Alisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so great to have you here. Now, let's start with something that you said that I want to unpack. Burnout is often masked as ambition. Now, what does that actually look like in a woman's life?
So I think the main thing in this is that we are really good at overriding in order to show up. We have responsibilities not only at work, but in our life. Maybe it's a busy family life or aging parents, whatever it may be, we are conditioned to really step beyond the depletion and the exhaustion and the fatigue in order to always be there. We're the ones holding everything together. We're the ones remembering everything. And if you are leading a team or if you are in a position at work where a lot of people also rely on you and you have built yourself up to a certain level where there's some expectations around that, you just keep going because you have to. And when we are, you know, like you kind of said, the Diet Coke, the coffee, we find ways to do it. And our body is allowing us to do that. So when it comes to that idea of masking burnout in ambition, so often the early phases of burnout are actually that honeymoon phase where you feel really excited and driven and purposeful in your work. And you want to do really well and you have ambitions, you have goals, but it can get lost in the picture if we're not paying attention, if we're just constantly masking it with stimulants or just the nature of pushing through.
That is so true. And that's what a good majority of people in our society do. And it's not good. It's not good at all. Now, what are some of the signs that, you know, that you're in burnout, that, you know, you keep mistaking for burnout for just being driven?
Well, it's interesting because the World Health Organization defines burnout from an occupational standpoint at this stage. It's really only based in how we're showing up at work. So that could be just generally feeling of exhaustion, low energy, maybe feeling a bit of dissatisfaction at work or negative feelings towards your work, and then also maybe not being as efficient or as productive as you once were. And if you think about that, that's something that we're not talking about outside of work as well. So that piece is often kind of missed, I think, in the conversation. But I think the signs before that, that's burnout, right? When you come to a place where you are just completely not okay with what your day-to-day looks like. You feel like you need to run away. You're like, okay, I gotta shut everything down. I'm gonna run away to the woods or just get away from it all and completely burn down my life and start over. Before then, there's so many signs around that that we, if we don't notice early enough, there's that's where we end up in that burnout phase. And so I think it's interesting to navigate that from both a career standpoint, but also recognizing that the demands of women in midlife go beyond 9 to 5. And of course, so many careers go beyond 9 to 5, right? It's all the time. So kind of trying to identify if any feelings of low energy, fatigue, energy roller coaster or crashes, or starting to feel like you were maybe not comfortable with not working all the time, because there's a bit of a hypervigilance, not only in work, but also in life. We have to make sure we're taking care of everybody and we're worried about everybody being safe. So I think in all of that, it can feel really natural and normal. But what I want to encourage women to do is really just notice and create some awareness around this earlier, because persistent chronic fatigue or persistent feelings of, oh my gosh, I have to answer all of these emails, that can be kind of come from within. That is really where you want to start building some awareness so you can step out before it goes too far.
That's such a great answer. And I think so many women wear so many different hats. And, you know, at some point, it just hits you. And you just get that totally burnt out feeling that we were talking about, you know, and then it's very hard to cope and move forward. It's, you know, burnout, you know, from work and doing too much, and burnout from going through perimenopause or menopause, and you know, can be very similar in lots of ways. And when, you know, you're struck in both areas, it could be coming at you like a tornado.
Absolutely. So many, I mean, I feel like it's a minority at this stage of women coming into perimenopause not depleted, you know? So trying to unpack the idea of, is this perimenopause? Is this burnout? Is this just me being really stressed all the time? Is this anxiety? Am I experiencing depression? It can be really disorienting.
100%. Now, why is it so easy to keep going? And even though you feel proud of yourself while your body is quietly sending distress signals?
You know, I don't think we've ever given, one, the education around what those signals would be from our body, and two, the permission to hear them and to see them. I think our society is built on output. It's built on success and progress and, you know, ambition and showing up and doing the things and productivity. And so often our, you know, our self-identity is mixed in with that. So if we feel like maybe we're taking a step back or we're taking a break, that can sometimes just feel like we're not doing enough, because it's really never enough. It really feels like it's never enough.
Yeah.
And right, for women especially, it's like it's always too much or too little. You know, there's never. So you're kind of in that mix all the time in the society and the culture and conditioning. And so I think that's really where we can easily get lost, because our body is really good at showing up for us. It's really good at that. It's built to manage what's happening, to get back to homeostasis, to make sure you're surviving, right? It's that survival. Yeah. And so I think one of the things that we don't notice when we're in survival mode is just that there's actually other modes.
Yeah.
We're just caught up in it as well.
I agree. I agree so much. And so many times, you know, even in my own career, I felt guilty for not consistently doing as much as I thought I needed to do, you know, right. Not giving myself a chance to just relax and reset.
Totally. Absolutely. I felt that myself, and not knowing that that's something that is actually a signal, you just keep going, right? You're like, oh my gosh, there's so much to do. I could, you know, your to-do list never ends. You're not done at the end of the day as a woman, right? It's continually going. So yeah, I think for myself, there's these habitual things. So if we don't notice and kind of pull back and just like get a big picture view before we go too far and recognize like, oh, I'm actually not comfortable with not working all the time. I feel the pressure, and like, that's like, I'm doing something wrong if I'm not always on.
Right.
That is just like a, you know, a habit that we've built into ourselves that we just have to be able to step back and create some awareness about.
I agree. Now, your journey into this work is not, you know, it was just, you know, it just didn't happen by accident, you know. it was, you know, that you really, you know, had your own experience that brought you to the place where you're at today. Now, you know, it definitely deeply personal, you know, but maybe you can, you know, share a little bit about, you know, how you got to, you know, one outstanding career to another outstanding career, but completely different than what the life you were living before.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, if I was more aware about perimenopause in my 30s, in my mid-30s, in my late-30s, I might have kind of identified with the fact that in midlife, things start to change and we start to evaluate our life. But that was what was happening for me. I had, gosh, all the way back to starting out in university, I started out in kinesiology. I was studying nutrition. I was studying physiology. I was, you know, thinking about a career in that mode. And I kind of just stumbled into journalism because I loved English. I loved writing. And so as a result, I switched because I actually, honestly, coming out of high school, you know, you don't know all the careers. But that for me was my interest was really in what I started out with. But then I just started feeling some passion for journalism. You know, at first I was like, okay, well, health and fitness journalism, that kind of makes sense. But then I found fashion and it just kind of blew me away. The creativity, the talent, storytelling, the beauty. Gosh, I was just kind of floored by recognizing what that world could look like. And I was very lucky early on. You know, I was 23 when I first got my first editor job at a magazine here in Vancouver. And that job took me to Fashion Week right away, took me to Australia for a press trip, took me to, you know, fashion shoots with celebrities and styling things, producing things, writing things. It was, you know, I got to experience all of it. And it was really in that time where, you know, magazines were big. Remember when they were so fat with all that? Everybody was in their black cars. And it was really kind of a heyday for that time. So I'm really lucky that I got to experience it. But I was thrown in. And that was really exciting, but also very disorienting at the same time.
Right.
It really kind of made me face my own relationship to my body, to food, to how I showed up in the world, and thinking about how much I was being judged all the time. It kind of felt that way, right? It's a very, you know, it can be until you really dig in and meet people, be that like surface level of things. But throughout that time, you know, I was navigating all of that, like what I was dealing with, because I was getting these great jobs. I was traveling. I was sitting, you know, two rows behind Anna Wintour at a fashion show. You know, it was so exciting. But throughout that period, I was just navigating my own kind of body dysmorphia and, you know, just surviving on Diet Coke and edamame and just doing the thing, trying to fit into sample sizes. And that was where things started to kind of unravel at home. I lost a cousin very early in her life. She was 19. And shortly after that, my mom passed away from cancer. And that was when I was 27. And so that pulled me out of the world of editorial. You know, I moved home trying to spend as much time as I could that I had left with her. And
wow,
that put me into a new career of marketing, and PR. It was kind of the flip side, and generally just the flip side of that at that time. And since then, it's really grown into different types of media platforms, right? And content and social media kind of thing. But like when I was an editor in a magazine, we would talk about words like celebrity. It was very new. So anyway, I came, you know, long, long time ago. But that is really where things kind of started to unravel in terms of grief for me, which I hadn't really had to face. I didn't know how to navigate. And I really, it just kind of sent me on like, okay, well, I know how to show up at work. I know how to do that. I'm really good at doing that.
Yeah.
So that was what I just threw myself into. And it took me a really long time to continue to unpack that grief and to manage it and to deal with it. But I also lost a number of family members after that, during that time. And so I think my burnout periods in my career, because I was, you know, climbing the corporate ladder in the marketing piece, you know, VP at a startup, and then moving to a big corporate, heading up a department. It was very, I knew how to do that. But inside, I really didn't know how to deal with the other thing. So it was very kind of like bit by bit for me, and unpacking the fact that it was burnout, but it was also grief not being managed and handled. So I would burn out and then jump to a new job because I just had the ability to do so. I was very lucky. I was able to find my way through that. If something burned me out, I was like, okay, well, I just got to jump to another job and things will be different. And when I was, you know, starting to feel like I was getting a bit jaded in the fashion industry, I was looking back at, okay, well, you know, what was it like for me, you know, 20 years ago? What did I think about 20 years ago? And I think that's the cool thing about midlife is that you kind of reconnect with yourself too and think about what was important to her and what she loved and maybe how she hasn't really been present with you for a little while.
Yeah.
And so that's where I started looking back into health and wellness. I moved first into continuing in marketing in that space, but that's really where I was able to learn about so many more modalities. I learned to meditate. That was really transformative for me because that was really me building clear awareness, and how I related to stress really changed. But for me, it always came back to the relationship with food. I had also gone through the journey of, well, I have a lot of cancer in my family. How can I work on my immune health? I went down the gut health, you know, gut healing route very early on, was learning about that. But it also, unfortunately, ended up just with a little bit more food fear because you're removing things to try and fix things. Right. But then if you don't have a path forward or a path back, you just end up stuck, I think. And then macro diets just to kind of fit into genes or whatever, right? So I was approaching food from a very restrictive standpoint. And I knew that that was something that was so foundational for our health, but I just knew that I wasn't getting the support I needed. So I decided to go back to school just before my 40th birthday and in nutrition. And that's just where it all changed. It was, this is where I'm supposed to be for the next 25 years of my life or whatever, however long I'm working.
Yeah.
And it really honestly changed everything for me personally too at the same time.
I love that. Now, what was the moment you realized the problem was not your schedule? It was your relationship with your own body.
Well, that's a good question. I think it was micro moments. I think the first start to that was making the decision to learn how to meditate because I knew I was detached in some way. And then much later, I think about this moment. In my last job in fashion, I was on another diet. We were in a completely crazy time at work. And I was, you know, working so many hours every day. And a colleague came over to me and looked at my plate and was like, salmon and blueberries, that's it? That's all you got for yourself while you're dealing with all this? Is that? And I was like, at the time, I was like, I don't know. And then it took me a few moments and a few days and a few months. And it was like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
I'm not actually doing anything to support my body. I'm just trying to control it.
Yes. That's so many people, you know, that's how so many people think, you know, it's just, you know, you just, you think you control your body, but you know, it's really, you can improve your body by what we put in our mouths and how we take care of our bodies. But, you know, if we're not on top of it, you know, our bodies will change significantly very quickly.
First, it can be the goal that you have that, you know, you are losing some weight or whatever that may be. But when you get into this stage of life, if you haven't, we just haven't been taught how to use food and what the purpose of food is for our body. Maybe in high school. Right? Like high school biology, but we're not living that. So when we get to that stage and we're doing the same things and then they're not working the same way, it's just an information gap at that stage.
Right.
But then it's also, we've related to food in this way for so long that there is a lot of unlearning and unraveling in that too. When we're starting to, like you said, use food to actually really support our health. There is, I think, for a lot of women, a time where we need to unpack how we've been relating to it for so many years.
For sure. Now, is this the combination, like I think so many women are living right now and nobody is like really naming clearly?
I think so. I think that we have been really lucky in this day and age to start to actually have conversations about perimenopause and menopause and be able to talk openly about it. I think it's really wonderful that is really opening up. Unfortunately, that leads to a lot of different things, right? A lot of different pressures. And so when we're kind of in that stage of like, okay, well, now I need to hit my fiber targets. I need to, you know, get my protein, like it's my full-time job. I need to be doing X, Y, and Z. I need to be lifting heavy. There's so much pressure again. And yeah. I think some practitioners out there and doctors are really great at having this conversation, but I just don't think we're having it enough that we can't, it's really hard for people to distinguish perimenopause versus burnout because they're so intertwined. And I think that is the piece that sometimes we can say, oh, well, it's perimenopause, but actually, yes, your hormones are having an impact, but there's been years of depletion before that.
Yeah.
Years of imbalance that's built up. So what's actually happening in your body systems?
Oh, I agree. And what happens when a woman who is already running on empty hits perimenopause?
I think what I'm seeing with my clients is just that the margin for error feels harder. So when we are, especially just from a standpoint of blood sugar regulation, that's one of the, especially when I'm working with fatigue and energy, and you're like trying to show up, right? That is one where you can really start to see roller coaster of energy.
Yeah.
And because our hormones are intertwined in how our body is regulating our blood sugar, as well, stress has an impact on that. When those two things converge and start to, you know, unravel earlier than we think, right? It's like the reproductive stage of aging in that, but we generally get warned about our fertility before we get warned about anything else that might be happening in our body as a result of what's happening to our fertility or to the hormones that are changing. So I think really it's the case that just the margin is changing. And then because we haven't really been taught how to support our body in depletion, so many women can think, okay, oh gosh, I'm maybe gaining some weight around the middle and that's where we end up seeing it. Or gosh, I'm coming home from work and I don't have anything left for my family. I've heard, you know, clients say they feel like they're fading from their own life at that stage.
Yeah.
And
I felt that too.
Yeah. Is that your experience?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, there's so many things that go into that. And I think that's the thing that we're just maybe not unpacking enough. But I think hopefully now we are, like, you know, if your menstrual cycle has changed and it's longer, you know, you have, you know, iron deficiency is such a large problem for us as well. So there's just so many things that we can actually work on and understand and do for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, that are maybe getting lost in the conversation because we're just taught to balance our hormones, which are never in balance, right? They're constantly in a symphony of talking to each other. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's really what people are coming into when they're coming into perimenopause in a depleted state.
Yeah. I feel like so many doctors too, like even OBGYNs, you know, and GYNs, they need to have more education. So many women go to them and they're only taught like a triangle of certain things. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, I hear from women, well, they weren't put me on birth control. And that was their answer, you know, or they told me to get a partial hysterectomy or a hysterectomy. That was their answer. Then they get put into, you know, postmenopause right away. And how does that even help? You know, you go from one extremity to the next. So definitely doctors need to be educated who deal with, you know, women coming to them with these questions. They need to be well educated. And a lot of them don't have that education. They're not taught in school about it. But how does perimenopause like change the energy picture? And why do these strategies, you know, that use to work completely stop working?
So perimenopause changes energy in a couple of ways. One, what I talked about is the blood sugar regulation. That's really how our body is feeling fueled and satiated and supported. And so often women are going on low carb diets and we're not necessarily getting the vitamins and minerals that we also need as cofactors for so many of our body's processes.
Right.
So there's that piece. There's also the sleep disruption piece that, you know, how, especially when we have fluctuations in estrogen and progesterone. Progesterone is actually sort of first on the decline in the very early stages. or where progesterone, or sorry, estrogen is kind of, you know, jumping up and down, and then they both start jumping up and down, right? There's these phases of things. But if we, you know, begun in this phase and not recognize that we probably need to actually pay more attention to our sleep and maybe get some support in our sleep, we end up in a stage where we just actually haven't understood how to rest properly. Right. And so the disruptions of like the 3 a.m. wake ups or that kind of thing are starting to happen. So of course, that's going to be part of your energy picture. You always have to get curious about sleep. But again, it's one of those things that we're really good at pushing through and overriding. It's like, oh, well, I'm used to broken sleep. I've been being woken up by, you know, maybe your kids for years or something, or, you know, you haven't slept that much because you work late and then you get up early or something like that, right? Your body is, you know, really, again, really good at helping you manage and get through and survive. And so that's another piece of it as well. And then again, you know, when it comes to changes in our menstrual cycle, really is where we start to see that iron depletion. But there's also so many different minerals and vitamins that we're just not talking about when it comes to the stress piece. So I would say those like are the first early kind of things of the energy piece.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just not necessarily recognizing them early enough.
Yeah.
So a lot of women that I work with who are on HRT and they, you know, it's a supportive aspect of their overall health picture, and there's still something missing for them. So that's really where I think the nutrition and the lifestyle habits are just really important, and they just become more important. And we've just, our bodies have just been really good at not having to do everything that we know maybe we should be doing already for our health.
I do hormone therapy, replacement hormone therapy, and I can't just do the hormone therapy. I had to change my entire diet. I had to change my sleeping habits. I had to change the entire way I was doing things. I had to incorporate exercise, you know, and diet. Big role, because, you know, It doesn't matter if you just do hormone replacement therapy. You really, everything you put in your body plays a huge role. And even if your libido is off, or if you're going through, you know, different changes and you're going through perimenopause into menopause, if you don't change the way you're eating and you don't change your diet and you don't change the way you're, you know, taking care of your body and incorporating exercise, even if it's just walking around the block, you are not going to get the full effect, and you're not going to feel as good as you really should. But for me, food is so important. And I feel like in today's society, we are so, it's the best word to say it. Our society, we lie to the public in a lot of ways. You know, we go into a food store and they have the way they market food, they make it look so healthy. And you go into the back of the ingredients and you see all these artificial ingredients, and people are eating these foods and our body doesn't know what to do with them. So it stores them. And then you're building up toxins into your body. So if you're not eating healthy, you're not eating the right foods, you're not taking care of your body, you're not going to feel, you know, you're not going to feel better. You're not going to improve. Diet plays a huge role. For me, I always felt like food is medicine. It's one of the most important things. And I always tell people, look at the ingredients before you take anything, you know, or eat anything, because so many people, you know, in our society, you go to Europe, and in Europe, half the, you know, like, you know, more than half the food is not allowed from America into Europe because it doesn't meet its standards. So it tells you, you know, how our society is. So we have to really be careful what we eat and really eat a healthy diet and make sure the foods we're buying are the right foods.
Yeah, I think the key there is really just how do we not only support and teach people to embrace the idea of whole foods, cooking at home.
Yeah,
where you have a little more control over things like sodium and things like sugar. I think this is where it kind of converges with the idea of just the demands on our life, right? How we're living. And if we aren't in a position to maybe have access to these types of foods or access to the time where we can actually make them.
Yeah.
It's just a really challenging picture, right? So I think the key is to really understand that first and foremost, we rely on our food for very specific nutrients. We just do. Yeah. We rely on it. So this is where the piece is. Sometimes we can be so disconnected from what actually is happening in our body. When we have vitamin C, for example, we think, oh, we take vitamin C when we're sick or something like that.
Right.
But it's doing so many different things in our body. It's important in so many different ways and processes.
Yeah.
And so I think that is where education is really something that would be wonderful to see just more and more and more of for people, because I think that can sometimes be the missing piece because you are disconnected from it. If you don't really understand, because again, we're back into that stage where I've been able to show up. I've been doing so well and it's fine. I have a few almonds in the morning in my coffee and I can get through the day. But then you come to this stage and you're like, huh, it's just feeling a little harder now. We haven't built that muscle of cooking, of, you know, getting into an area or a place in the world where you can really connect with the food that is being grown. Really being able to connect with food in that way. I think that's really the first step is to just, okay, let's start relating to food in a different way so that when you do have to make choices for convenience or for, you know, what you have available to you, you can just make them mindfully, but also create some balance in your life. So there isn't the pressure to, you know, cook a 4-course meal every night.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what does the stage of life feel like the body is betraying you? And like, what is actually happening hormonally?
Oh, well, in terms of the betrayal standpoint, I think it's a very complex piece. I think we come to this stage where, what is the betrayal?
Yeah.
Right? I think that for me needs to be the first question. So often the betrayal might be, I'm dieting and exercising and I'm not losing weight. Or the betrayal is, I used to be able to show up and now I can't.
Yes.
Or I used to be able to sleep through the night myself. Oh my gosh, I could sleep anywhere. And I went through a period of the 3 a.m. wake ups and it was like, what the heck? This is not even me. This is not who I am. I don't identify as a person who doesn't sleep through the night. So I think that that has to just be a question first of like, what do you feel is the betrayal?
Yeah.
And unpacking whether or not that's actually a betrayal or a signal, a sign. Something to pay attention to. And I think so often in this conversation around the hormonal change, there are a lot of things that we are still even, you know, getting a deeper understanding around of how, just how much estrogen and progesterone and testosterone interact in the women's body with all of our different processes. But if you actually take a step back and look, okay, well, what is the betrayal? What is actually happening in my body? Disruption in a hormone, it's like a symphony. They all work together. They're all trying to manage things together. So I think first, I just really try to encourage a mindset of getting curious first and foremost, because when we think about that idea that our body is betraying us, it starts to make it feel like it's our fault.
Yeah.
It starts to make it feel like we have been the ones to fail.
Yeah.
But we've been the ones that have been showing up. We're still showing up. So I like to start there first.
I agree with you 100%. And for the listeners, if you have been pushing through exhaustion for years, wondering why your body is not responding the way it used to, or feeling like perimenopause has changed everything, this conversation was made for you. Follow this podcast right now. Every week we bring you real conversations with real experts who give you real answers about your health. Now, I want to talk about something that does not get discussed enough in our health conversations. You mentioned the silent expectation women carry, the invisible load that impacts their health in ways that no supplement or meal plan can fix. You know, what are those expectations and where do they come from?
Well, this is going to be very different for everyone, but I think from a larger cultural standpoint, First and foremost, we're taught to be the people pleaser. We're taught to be the nice one. We're taught to be the one who takes care of everybody else, makes everybody feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And the expectation is that you are constantly in that mode of, okay, yeah, I'm not ruffling feathers here. You know, I think, and again, it's going to be very personal, but I think just as a general statement, that feels true for a lot of people, for myself and for a lot of the women that I work with. And next to that, there is also an expectation around how we look and what the standard of beauty is, mm-hmm, and the pressures around that. So yeah, when we think about those two things, the silent expectation in all of that is that we're just taking care of all of it. You know, yeah, we're doing all of the waxing appointments and the facial appointments and the the exercising and maybe the lymphatic massage and whatever we're doing to look well. Yeah. And then we're also managing everybody else's schedule or,
right,
you know, appointments, or, you know, we're the ones so often. And again, I feel like this is a general statement again, so I just always want to,
yeah,
say that's, you know, some people are really not in this situation, but so many of us are the ones who remember to put the chicken, take the chicken out of the fridge into the out of the freezer into the fridge to make, yeah, for dinner, right? And if we see it, maybe our husbands do that, we're like, oh my gosh, that's so nice. Low bar for that. So we're just constantly in that mode. We just, yeah, are always thinking ahead. We're always making sure people are taken care of. And the silent expectation of that can just really wear thin, especially as we enter this phase of life,
yeah,
where we, mm-hmm, start to, it's like a reckoning. Honestly, it's not that decline. It is a reckoning. We've been going through this for centuries, right? And I think, yeah, a lot of different cultures seeing it in a different way. And it's really, right, eye-opening, but it's also a very uncomfortable place for a lot of people because you're not used to setting those boundaries. You're not used to saying, nope, that's not happening, or no, I am not okay with that.
Yeah.
And, or no, I love my body just the way it is.
Yeah. You know?
So I think, yeah, I think there's just a lot of pressure. And so when we come to this stage, they just start to reveal themselves, which can be, again, disorienting, but also, oh, yeah, can be really, really exciting because we get to choose how we want to be for the next chapter of our life.
Right. Exactly. That's a great way of looking at it. You know, how does the weight of those unspoken obligations show up physically?
Well, I think this is really where, first and foremost, if that is a constant for you, your lifestyle may be more sedentary. You might be more in constant hypervigilance mode, so your nervous system is always activated. And then you're not able to get out of that state where you can actually do, maybe you're doing movement to fit into a certain pair of jeans or to like think about it in that way, but you're not doing the movement in a way that's filling your own cup. This is just really where we are. We start to see the burnout and the deep fatigue and the depletion. And so when our nervous system is constantly activated in that, again, it's going to be hard to sleep. It's, yeah, going to be hard to rest at all, especially when we have all those expectations. Like if I'm not taking the chicken out of the freezer, we're not having dinner. It's, you know, it's all, we're like kind of always in this state. So that's really where I think it shows up first.
Oh, I agree with you. Now let's make this practical for women listening right now who are exhausted, overwhelmed, and have already tried everything. You built something called the 4 Carrots Method. You know, you built it around the 5 pillars, including joy, starting small, season 11, and food freedom. You know, what does that rebuilding energy actually look like? You know, not in theory, but like in a real woman's real schedule.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the 14 carrots method really came from, first and foremost, my schooling and my education in this, but then layered in with my own life and also with the things that we're talking about today. So when you think about the pillars of, first, everything is connected.
Yeah.
And the idea of seasonal living, those two things keep coming back to awareness. Those two things, that is the very first step. So I feel like for any woman that's feeling this way and feels like they're stuck in it, starting to build some mindfulness around just what's happening in your day, trying to train the new muscle of non-judgmental awareness around that piece, just starting to notice, because so often we can get to a point where we're like, we sit down with our doctor and we're like, oh gosh, I don't know. I just feel terrible. I don't know how to explain this. So I think empowering yourself first with the permission that it's that you are allowed to not feel tired all the time, that this is a signal from your body, starting to build some awareness around what your energy patterns are and getting really curious is the very first step. So when I think about that from a seasonal standpoint, that's like it's going to show up differently in winter and summer, right? Our environment plays a role in this. And then, of course, the season of our life when it comes to our reproductive stage of our life, too. So all of those things, I think the first thing to do is just maybe journal and just start to note what's happening over, you know, a couple of weeks or a week, so that you can first and foremost check with your primary healthcare provider and say, hey, these are the things that are going on. Are there some things that we can look at so that you feel empowered to have that conversation? So I think that's the first step that I always recommend. And then I also support clients in doing, because even here in Canada, it's not always easy to get a GP, a doctor. So navigating that, making sure that you figure out what your options are in having a primary healthcare provider that can potentially do, you know, maybe do some ferritin testing, which is essentially your iron stores, or looking into some real health markers. And then, of course, you get into that stage where everything looks fine. They're all normal, which is wonderful. First and foremost, celebrate that, because that is a really good sign, because you are not in a stage where you are having to have some kind of medical intervention, or there's, you know, medications or ultimately life-saving things that have to start to happen for you, right? So yeah. I think sometimes we look at the normal labs of like, oh, that's frustrating. Yes, absolutely. But first, like, just so give yourself a moment to say, oh, yeah, good job. My body is helping me. It's doing its thing. It's like, it's in a good place. But if you want to start feeling better, that's where you just start to get curious. And once you unravel some of those symptoms, some of those patterns, then you can start to look at, okay, well, how am I sleeping? Do I need to talk to somebody about my sleep? And then what does my diet look like? Just from a very curious standpoint, what am I consuming? There's lots of apps for this, but were you so used to using them from a calorie restriction standpoint that it's not always perfect for everybody? But how can you just journal what you're eating and take a look at, okay, you know, where might there be some gaps for me?
Yeah.
And so I think the first step is always awareness. Yeah. So in terms of what to do first, I would encourage just that piece.
I love that. Now, what is the signal most important shift a woman can make this week that will actually move the needle?
So I think first and foremost, some gentleness and some compassion for yourself. I think that taking a moment or two or 10 minutes to step out of the stress cycle and give yourself some grace, some gratitude, some love and attention can do more for you than you realize.
Yeah.
Take a moment to breathe, to shift how we breathe, take some deep breaths. I think sometimes we underestimate oxygen and hydration. So if you can take those 10 minutes to get outside and just breathe deeply, some sort of fresh air, if you're able to find some trees.
Yeah.
Get yourself a good glass of water. Make sure you're staying hydrated. Those are some of the survival tools that we sometimes can forget about when we're very busy.
Oh yeah, 100%. Now you say midlife is not a slow decline; it's a recalibration. You know, for the women listening who are in that exhausted place right now and cannot imagine feeling vibrant again. You know, what do you want her to know?
I really want her to know that there is another way. I think there's the mindfulness piece that we've been talking about, but what really shifts is hope. Just know that there are ways that you can support your body to feel better. There are. And you can absolutely find a way to access that with some support.
Yes.
But just first and foremost, know that you don't have to suffer through this. This is mm-hmm. not a requirement. Ambition should never, burnout should never be the cost of ambition.
Right.
That you have, like, just ultimately giving yourself the permission to choose to know that there's a better way, that there's a more lighter, more energized version of you that you can bring back online.
I love that answer. I love that. Now, you know, can you tell us a little about the services and the different things you provide?
Sure. Yeah. So everything's on my website, which is 14carats.com. It's all spelt out. So 14 with an F. And my practice is 14 carats 1-4. So that is where you'll find my services. My services primarily are one-on-one. So you mentioned the 14 carats method. That's the method that I layer into how I support women with their personalized goals, with what's happening in their body. So I do one-on-one consultation for nutrition and lifestyle change. I work with women from a 14-week standpoint all the way through to 6 months and beyond to essentially unpack what's going on, first and foremost, gathering the data, getting mindful, and then being able to build supports that actually make sense for your life. You know, not coming into it saying, okay, let's get 30 grams of fiber. Well, maybe we need to do a little fiber training first. Maybe we need to do this. So really, you know, gentle steps toward your goals. So I work with women one-on-one. I also have a free download that is essentially an overview of the Perimenopause Energy Foundation. So looking at nutrients and foods in a different way, I give you the list of the ones that you want to look out for and an easy grocery list and a couple of recipes. So that can be a really good place to start. And then soon I will be having a mini course that you can do to really right set the afternoon slump. That is so often the one that really just, you know, drives us crazy in our day. And this is really something that you can solve if you follow, you know, the steps in just a few days. This is really something that you can actually see really quick results because it's really based in the blood sugar balance of that. And yeah, that's what I'm offering right now.
Love it. I love it. And can you remind everybody one more time where they can find you on your webpage?
Yes, it is 14carats.com. And I'm also on Instagram at 14caratsmethod, 1-4. Carrots spelt as the food, but it all comes back to 14 carat living, where it's that everyday gold that you can wear to find your shine again.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. Now, for the listeners out there, your exhaustion is not a character flaw. It is information. It is the answer is not to push yourself harder. It's to eat or eat less, or to try in another, you know, protocol that was never designed for a woman's body in the first place, you know, her hormones or her real life. You know, Alisa is living proof that midlife is a recalibration, not a decline. And today reminded us that when you give your body what it actually needs, something remarkable happens. You come back to yourself, you know, and I just want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I think, you know, I think so many women, you know, we all go through this. It's just, there's no choice. We all go through it. And, you know, but the problem is that a lot of times we don't know what's happening and we don't know how to handle it. And I'm so glad you're taking such a holistic approach to it, because I think that is the way to go. I think, you know, it's so important that we incorporate healthy, clean eating into our lifestyle, because I don't think a lot of people realize the harmful effects of eating food that isn't clean. It doesn't really take a lot of work. And you see such huge changes in the way you feel, your clarity, your focus, your energy, everything. And it's made a huge difference in my life. I'm a living test. Like you say that, you know, clean eating, changing the way you really, you know, the foods you put in your mouth and how you start to feel the difference after a while. And, you know, it's just it's a huge, huge impact. And I'm so glad that you were on the show today to bring awareness to lots of women. You can just change your life. Small little tweaks to change your life forever. You know, why go through life struggling and not feeling your potential self if you don't have to? And You give people a choice. And I love that, you know, you're doing what you're doing. I thank you so much for being on the show. You're amazing. And I'd love to.
Thank you so much, Stacey. This has been such a pleasure. And thank you so much for this conversation. I really love the compassionate and gentle and supportive conversations that you have here. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.